Shrink Wrap Radio number 799, Varun Gandhi, Ph.D., on story, passion, and service. Now, here is the interview.
And now it's time for Dr. Dave and Shrink Wrap Radio.
You're on the couch again with Dr. Dave. And Shrink Wrap Radio is playing on again. Yeah. It's all in your head. It's all in your head. Shrink Wrap Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio. Shrink Wrap Radio.
It's Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head. And now here's your host, Dr. Dave.
My guest today, Dr. Varun Gandhi, describes himself as a orchestrator, soulpreneur, angel investor, inventor, philanthropist, and a water doctor. He enjoys orchestrating businesses, events, and ideas about the self and self-image. He also has a podcast directed to allowing fellow Americans of South Asian heritage to tell their stories and support one another. Now, here's the interview. Dr. Varun Gandhi, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you, David. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, I'm really happy to have you here. You know, you kind of reached out to me and I kind of, well, who is this guy? You sort of reached out and you said, well, I've been looking for a podcast that might be open to you. And I thought, well, let's check him out. And you have a podcast that you do. And so I checked you out there and I really whetted my appetite to get to know you and to have you on the show here. And so I came away with the impression that you're all about story, passion, and service. And I know that you have a podcast in which you facilitate other people telling their stories. And we'll talk about that down the line a bit. I think you have a fascinating story yourself. So how about you're taking time to share it with us here and in as much detail as you want? We've got plenty of time.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate it. Love and abundance, everyone. You know, before I go into my story, I really quickly want to do the water ritual. And you know, this is my reminder for everyone to drink water on a daily basis. I recently read this book called Your Body's Many Cries for Water. And it essentially says that there are about 50% of diseases out there, commonly occurring diseases, would go away if we just drink enough water, like migraines and colds and things like that. Just drinking enough water, being hydrated on a regular basis and maintaining that, right? I think the maintenance is important as well. So I just wanna remind everyone to take a water. And if you have a little bit of water with you right now, let's take a sip together. Cheers.
Okay, I've got some here. Okay, well,
Yeah. Good.
Okay.
And so my story now.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and so I have one of the things in my title is a water doctor, and this started in a very different format. Right now I'm reminding people to drink water, and that's kind of like a therapy for me. But it started off in a very different fashion. I was in that common path in life. You know, I'm going to go graduate from high school, go to college, just get a master's, get a bachelor's degree.
I'm going to take you further back than that. I want you to tell me about your early life, your family background, where you were born, your growing up years.
Sure.
We're going to start way back, the whole story.
Wow, okay. Yeah, let's do that. So I grew up in Dubai, lived there till I was 15. and moved to America in 2001. That's a few months before 9/11, July 2001. So the first 15 years, I grew up in a very, even though it's in Dubai, and you hear, think about Dubai now when you see all these sky rises and modern Dubai, which has actually been developed in the last 15 years since I left. But what I remember Dubai as this, you know, little city in the middle of a desert that had a lot, that already had a lot going on, but it was still very quiet in the sense of, you know, all of this hoo-ha about the development, all of that wasn't there. So it's very simple living. And there, you know, there was a huge Indian population. I'm from India, and my parents were born and brought up there. So because of, you know, this huge Indian population, there were a lot of schools, private schools that come from India. So all of the education and everything was kind of Indian based. And we learned Indian history, geography. We did some local work as well, you know, studying about the history of the country that we were in, United Arab Emirates, you know, learning more about it, learning the language as well. We had a second language of Arabic, but before that we had English, and then Hindi was the second language that we had to learn, and the third language was Arabic. So we had a kind of a holistic curriculum.
Yeah, those languages develop your brain, you know?
They do.
Learning those languages at an early age.
Yeah. I see the value of them now, right? Now I'm kind of reaping the benefit of knowing multiple different languages.
Yeah.
But back then, I'm like, why are we doing this? You know, I find it pointless. Because in essence, the way everything was taught there was to memorize it. Like, just memorize all of this. Even Arabic, for example, I mean, it's not our first language, but we were taught how to read and then memorize everything so that when you get the test, you could just basically just write it down. And,
yeah.
You know, you'll get
Was Dubai reaching out to Indians with work opportunities? Was, you know, I know they're oil rich, and so they needed workers. Was what was going on for your family and your community there?
For my family specifically, it was actually a different trajectory. My parents were there since the early 80s, and they lived there because my dad is a civil engineer. So there was a lot of construction going on. They've always been heavy in construction. And so he had found an ideal job there. And initially he started out doing with some business. He was an entrepreneur in Dubai, but it was very difficult. The laws were against him. And over a couple of years or so, he lost a lot of money, lost everything. This was before I was born even. And now when I was born, the day I was born, my mom was delivering me at 5 p.m. In the morning, in the a.m., my dad had given an interview at 10 o'clock in the morning. And they said, when can you start? Like, basically the day I was born, he had got this job that kept us stable for 15 years all the way through until we moved to America. Before that, he was barely paying rent. There were periods of when my brother was a few months old, or maybe even a year old, my mom would hide with my brother, turn off all the lights when the landlord came for the money, because they wouldn't have money to pay the rent. You know, so they were like, they had seen those times. And when I was born, things suddenly shifted for them. Everything started, you know, becoming stabilized. But my dad grew up with a scarcity mentality because of that rough period in his life, right?
Sure.
So now he still carries that scarcity mentality. And that came in me as well for the first 30 years of my life. I lived in that scarcity mentality. It's only until I started slowing down, meditating, which I'll talk about it later as well. But it was only until I started slowing down is when I realized, like, hey, I'm running from scarcity, and it's up to me to move towards abundance, to switch my mindset. That's all inside of me. And this is part of my journey of understanding how we are always telling stories.
Okay. You're getting a little ahead in the story again.
I'm jumping way ahead.
Did your parents have any particular religious orientation?
Yeah, we are Jain, which is a small religion out of India, practiced by about 5 million people worldwide. And essentially, one of our main tenets is ahimsa, which is nonviolence. A couple others are aparigraha and anekantvad. Anekantvad is multiplicity of viewpoints, meaning, you know, accepting all of the different viewpoints that other people hold.
I like that. Yeah.
Good. It's like we're all looking at the elephant, but we may just see the foot of the elephant and not look at the whole body of the elephant.
Right.
You know, and just thinking that it's a tree. And so that's one of the tenets. And so, you know, nonviolence is big for Mahatma Gandhi, for Martin Luther King Jr., you know, when he was doing the nonviolence movement here.
So is Gandhi a name that you were born with, or was that adopted to
that's,
match
that's
your
my,
own?
The name that I was born with, yeah.
Oh, it was, okay.
Yeah, so that's my ancestor's last name has always been Gandhi for as long as I
can. Yeah, so that's a nice line to be in right there. You know, yeah. Somewhere you're related to the well-known yeah. other Gandhi, yeah. And what was the I've seen that I associate with Jainism also a real reverence for life and for animal life.
Yes, it's that's part of the nonviolence, ahimsa. It's, you know, every life, no matter how small, no matter how big, is the same, is equal, and we treat it as equal. So, you know, one way of that I practice ahimsa in a daily basis is if I see a bug in the house, I'll gently take it outside and, you know, let it go outside into my backyard or street or whatever.
Yeah, my wife does that, and at least one of my sons does that. I can't confess to always being quite that spiritually oriented to bugs in my house.
It does take a level of, you know, so my wife is scared of bugs. So she's always like, she wants to practice nonviolence. So she'll run away from it and be like, hey, this is on you. You go take care of it.
Yeah,
whatever it takes to take it out of the house.
Yeah, I try to do that too with my wife. Okay.
So in that sense, I've developed the tolerance or developed that, you know, sense of I'm not really afraid of the bug. You know, at times I'll find a cockroach around my office and I'll, like, you know, scoop it out outside in a pan. And, you know, just do what I can. But essentially, that's a tenet that we can all live with, you know, nonviolence in every form. Part of that is the veganism movement originates from that nonviolence principle of not harming animals, not supporting cruelty to animals in various forms.
Yes, yes. So was there prejudice towards Indians in Dubai?
Yes, and you would hear about it, and occasionally I would face it. But there was, I would say, you know, to give you a percentage-wise, probably about 70 to 75% of the population of United Arab Emirates was foreign, meaning they came from the Indian subcontinent, India, Sri Lanka, Afghanistan, Pakistan, all those different countries, Bangladesh, everywhere, Nepal. Because of the workers, a lot of them come from this population. I was fortunate enough to, you know, my parents, my dad was skilled, he had gone to college, so he had the skills of, you know, construction and understanding how to construct structures and buildings and things like that. So he had a job where he was in our office and working on, you know, estimating bids and things like that on construction projects. So I was fortunate enough to have a stable life growing up because of my dad's well-paying job.
Yeah. So you went to high school there?
I went to high school there and I moved here in 11th grade. So I did 2 years of high school there. And then moved here. So it was a rough time to come here, started, 11th grade in high school in an American. Being maybe having 10 kids the same color as me in my class.
And where was that? That you?
This was located? In northwest of Atlanta, of downtown Atlanta, in a city called Kennesaw. And I'd gone to this high school called North Cobb High School. Which, I mean, it was a great high school, no complaints about it. It was just that I was going through a lot that time, you know, coming to a place where you don't know anyone.
Right.
I did have family here, my cousins. So my mom's sister, was the reason that we were able to come here and her family, because they sponsored us way back in the 80s. And then in the 2000s, about 12 to 13 years later, we got our call for the interview to get our green card. So it took the whole process of 13 years to come here.
My goodness. Yeah, it takes a long time.
Take a look. Yeah. And now it's even longer. Now it's like 40, 50 years.
So. Oh my goodness. Yes. So at that point in high school, did you have any kind of career goal, or was your family kind of pushing you in one direction or another?
They weren't really pushing me in a direct, well, they were pushing me towards the engineering, towards that, you know, the sciences or computers, but essentially towards the sciences, engineering. And it's always been in my family as well. My dad is an engineer. His dad is an engineer. Fourth generation ago is an engineer. And all of the same kind of engineering, civil engineering. So when I went into school, I was into college even. High school, I was lost. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And so when I applied to college, I applied as an undecided engineer. Back then in Georgia Tech, we had that as a major, but you could apply into that. And then a year later, 2 years later, you could select your major.
Yeah, and Georgia Tech is well known for as an engineering school.
Yeah, that was the closest school to us, 25 miles away, and it was one of the best schools in the country for engineering, at least in the top 10.
Yeah.
Or, you know, top 15 in different categories. So
I'm a rambling wreck from Georgia Tech.
There you go. There you go. my degree is right up there, Georgia Tech.
All right. So is that where you got your PhD?
I was fortunate enough to be approved to go through from my bachelor's all the way to my PhD. So I was at Georgia Tech for 9.5 years.
Wow. And so so your PhD is in engineering, which is unusual for my show. Usually the PhDs are from psychology or, you know, something related to that. But you're very welcome. I was originally accepted into electrical engineering at the University of Pennsylvania. Wow. But I switched out early because I did not have the strong enough math background. So,
Electrical. I did take a couple of electrical classes when I was going through Georgia Tech as an undergrad, and I did not enjoy it. I'm glad I wasn't in it.
Yeah. I was a real fan of electronics as a kid because I became a ham radio operator. I don't know if you're familiar with that term. It was at the time that I grew up, shortwave radio was a great hobby, and you could listen to and talk to, if you got licensed, you could talk to people all over the world, Morse code and so on. So I was really into that 14, 15, 16 years of age.
That's amazing. Man, you rarely get to hear that now. Those stories are a lot.
The world has changed so much. Like, it was a big deal, you know, as a small kid, my ambition, I knew that the soldiers had walkie-talkies. And I thought, wow, that'd be great. I could talk to my friend across town if I had a walkie-talkie. And I begged my parents, I want a walkie-talkie for Christmas. They went to war surplus stores. They couldn't find a walkie-talkie, you know, at that time. And it was out of that desire that I then read about and found out and, you know, figured out how to become a quotes, ham radio operator.
Oh, man, that's such a great story.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm going to tell my stories in here, too, a little bit.
We'll mix it up. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, so it sounds like, you know, we can move into I'll let you charge ahead now into your adult life, that you were doing your best to live the, quotes, American dream, or maybe the Indian dream of great business engineering success.
Yeah, it was this traditional life of, you know, the career, and continuously focused on that 20 years, 30 years, put into one field and build it. And so for what I was familiar with, what my parents were familiar with, is having a focus in one career and finding a job within that. Not so much the business, right? My dad already had a bad experience with business. So he was kind of pushing me in the direction of finding a stable job, finding a stable career. And that's what my focus was as well. I was like, all right, that's the only thing I know. Let me do it.
Let's find a safe spot that I can just stay in.
Yeah. Comfortable. Yeah, exactly. And I was doing that for a long time. I graduated with a PhD. I was like, okay, I'm so focused on environmental engineering. So my PhD was environmental engineering. And specifically, I was focused on the drinking water that comes into our house, I was focused on a certain treatment process before it came into the house. And you know, that was my PhD on it. So that was my initial start in the phrase of water doctor, because I have my
right. So it really makes sense from that point of view.
So that's how I started as a water doctor.
And also I'm thinking of you as a Jainist, you know, that it was a good sort of spiritual outlet in a way, because you were going to devote yourself to the environment and to, you know, that we live in.
You know, it's a mixed bag, I would say, because the only reason is the nonviolence principle, right? What I was doing my doctorate in was using UV radiation, ultraviolet radiation, to not really kill the bug, but them not being able to replicate. The reason that something infects us and we get affected or have a disease inside of us is because that bug comes in and then it replicates.
Yeah.
Replicate over and over again, right? So what the UV radiation would do is to zap its DNA so that it cannot replicate.
Right.
And so it was kind of a mixed bag, because I was hurting the little organism that's in the water, even though I know it's for a greater cause of preventing catastrophe in the human health sphere, public health sphere. So looking at that lens, yes, definitely it was, as being a Jainist, you know, following Jainism, it's very aligned with our principles.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. And so from there, you know, I got my PhD, graduated, I got a job, I found a job, and I moved to Idaho. So my whole life I'd been in Atlanta. My whole American life was in Atlanta. And the only job interview that I got, that I had, the only job offer that I received was in Idaho, Boise, Idaho. So I moved there, not knowing that Idaho existed. But I was like, you know, I mean, when I went for the interview, that was the first time I was like, wow, that is a state. I didn't really know that it existed, but I'm going to go check it out. And it's beautiful. If you haven't been to Idaho, anybody that's listening right now, or David, even you, please definitely go visit Boise. And the northern part of Idaho is beautiful. Mountains, high mountains, and it's just gorgeous. So I went out there. And now, this is I've been talking about my career thus far. I'm going to go a step into my love life and rewind just a little bit.
Good. I'm always interested in that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was in this amazing relationship as I was going through my PhD. And she was the one that I thought was, you know, the one. I saw her with two kids, that suburbia life, the American dream. You know, I saw her with that, in that role. And all of a sudden, things unraveled over 6 months. And next thing I knew, we were on a break. I don't know if you watch Friends, but you know, there's a whole thing about we were on a break in Friends. And so we were on a break. And at that point, and I was going through my PhD, like 6 months away from graduation. So this was high time for me to focus to, you know, put my dissertation together, my 150, 200 page book. Write all of that and then put my presentation and create everything so that I could finally graduate. Well, I couldn't focus on that. So I told her, look, I need time away from you. I really need to focus on this and continue with this so I could graduate. You know, I already have a deadline of August, and this was like 3 months, 4 months out.
Sure.
So at that point, I guess in her mind, she decided like, hey, I'm going to move on. And she kind of moved on and I was still kind of like stuck in that, hey, we're still, you know, I still want to date you. I still want to like, you know, take it further, but I need to focus on this for now. So that kind of happened. And I was like, I wasn't sure. So what I did was, you know, I said, let's meet up. Let's go on a one final date and let's, you know, see how things are between us. And if you want to move forward, let's just move forward. If you want to move on, let's move on. Well, at that point, I didn't have any feelings. I kind of like, you know, that whole spark that lasted for 2 years wasn't there anymore. And
Had you been married, or it was all dating up to that?
It was all dating, yeah.
Okay.
In my mind, I had already been engaged to her, but you know, like physically, it was all dating at that point.
Okay.
But it escalated really quickly. Like within a month, we had said "I love you" to each other. From month one to month three or four, she had gone to India. I was in America, so like we were going through this phase of, you know, we had already said "I love you" right before she left. And then she had gone, and now we're not able to see each other for 3 months, not even be able to speak to each other on a daily basis. It was like through emails once a week, you know, so that kind of like made us grow fonder of each other, made us grow even closer because we were sharing our stories through email. And so we got really close in a very short period of time. So even those 2 years, it felt like a five-year-old relationship because we had done so much. Towards the end, I started realizing that I was turning into something that I did not enjoy. And this is where, when I was with her, I was very, all of the love and everything inside of me would come out. But when I was apart from her, I realized there was a lot of jealousy. There was a lot of anger. There was a lot of negative story creation in my mind that was harming me. Not only that, I was also putting all of that on her. And so all of the jealousy would come out at this point when I wasn't in the same city as her, because for the last about 6 months or so, she had taken up a job, which was 4 hours away. So I wouldn't see her on a daily basis. And because of that, I would create like paranoia in my mind. Oh, like, she's going to leave me. She's going to find someone else, someone more interesting than me. So there was like self-worth issues there as well. So all of that started coming up and I was like, I don't enjoy this person. And then I would get really annoyed with her. I get really angry with her for no reason, for like really tiny things like, oh, I want to go hang out with my coworkers who happen to be all male because she was working in a factory, in a paper mill. And so naturally, the environment of majority of a male population. Well, so she would go and hang out with the younger males and I would get really jealous and upset. And so I'd always, get in fights with her right before she would go and hang out. So it was a really like a negative time for me as well. And all this stuff was coming out for me. So it all 6 months kind of went downhill. And now I was in this phase of, I was still had to graduate and I had broken up with her. But for the first few months I could focus and I was, doing my best. But I would wake up like with tears in my eyes every morning for first about 3, 4, 6 months. Yeah. Like things are not the same anymore. I was used to that way of life where there was a lot of love and all of a sudden now that's no longer my reality. And I couldn't accept that fact. Right. It took me a while to accept it. So I'd wake up, be like, what the fuck is going on? And, I'd shed tears and it was same story for 2 months. So at that time, but I still had to focus on writing and, really had to concentrate on my work. So I would put on something comedy in the morning. First thing in the morning, I'd wake up before jumping on the work. I would sit on my computer and Jon Stewart had his daily show.
Yeah.
Which was really funny. Really enjoy it every morning, that 22 minutes of comedy. And that's how I would start my day with his comedy. And he got me through this really tough period of, making sure I could finish my PhD and get over that.
Fascinating. Yeah, I was going to ask you, did you go to the counselor on campus or go into therapy to deal with that? But no, you went to the comedy.
I went to comedy. Yeah, I
can relate to that.
Yeah. And comedy has been there. Even now when I need something to pick me up, I'll just go to a comedy, Dave Chappelle or something funny online. And it always picks me up.
Yeah.
And, so I was going through that, but then I moved to Idaho. So now Idaho, this was October. I graduated in August and then October I moved to Idaho. During this time, like Idaho was my period of going into the cave because I didn't know anyone in Idaho. I was all by myself, all alone again, just like when I come from Dubai to Atlanta.
Yeah.
But this time I was a man doing it by myself. At that time I had my parents, some support, but this time it was like, I landed in Idaho, don't know anyone. Well, so this kind of taught me a lot, but even though I had all of this alone time, I wouldn't use it or utilize it towards my spiritual work or towards diving deeper and understanding what my issues were. What I would instead was looking for is opportunities to distract myself. So I would go, to the bar, I'd get drunk every weekend, hang out with friends, find more people to hang out with, anything to distract myself from that work, right? Yeah. So first year I just went in that. And there was a lot of alcohol involved because there was a lot of pain and suffering in my life. I used alcohol to distract myself from that constant pain and the suffering, that voice in my head. So the first year I went and just killing myself in alcohol and food and all this nasty stuff. I've been vegetarian all my life, but French fries is vegetarian as well. And so is there are a lot of unhealthy options that I was exposed to, and constantly just eating out, killing myself. And finally, I realized about a year and a half into it, like, hey, something is off. Like, I don't, you know, I feel this way, and I no longer want to feel this way. I need to do something about it. And that's when I started reading. I read this book by Deepak Chopra called The Book of Secrets. And it's a very advanced, at that time, it was very advanced for me. You know, 95% of it, I didn't understand. I didn't pick up. It just went over my head. But there was a little bit that I did pick up, and that was meditation. And that began my journey into meditating. And so I'll tell you, up until this point, I was on that rat race, that wheel, just running constantly. I had never given myself to slow down to, you know, and without slowing down, I wasn't able to introspect. I hadn't, you know, gone back and understood what I've done in the past. You know, I'd yeah. never done that. I was 25, 26, 27 years of my life. I'd never done a self-introspection exercise. So finally, when I picked up meditation, I was giving myself that space, giving myself that time, you know, even if it was that hour, whatever that time it was, but I was now had the space to do some sort of journaling, to even just sit with myself and, you know, pay attention to what my past experiences were, especially that relationship towards the end of it, how I was feeling. So I went through a phase when I was in Idaho. I may have done a lot of this unconsciously, but it was kind of happening in the background where I was processing everything that happened during that relationship.
Yes.
Why was I getting jealous? Why was I angry in these situations? You know, I had to know this because I didn't want to carry that forward in my next relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
During my time in Idaho, again, I was distracting myself with another relationship. There was like an on and off relationship, but kind of steady with one person. But we would have our fights, going ups and downs. So it was very turbulent. And I would see my old self in that relationship as well. And so I was doing the work while I was going through that relationship in Idaho. What I realized is one of the things that I'd grown up with is Bollywood movies.
And Bollywood,
right? In America, Hollywood, people grow up with movies, growing up watching these movies. I realized that the movies that I was exposed to had this jealous protagonist that had to protect this female from the bad guys. Uh-huh. And the bad guys could be anywhere and everywhere. And, you know, any male talking to her would be a bad guy. So I had this kind of perception in my mind of this person that I had to be in a relationship with a girl. Yeah. And I was living that macho man, you know, making sure that I was in control of the relationship, like putting a firm hand, things like that. And it was very, very controlling. And I was realizing that even though I was spending time with her, I was enjoying that time, but I would be in this phase of controlling things if I, you know, whenever I could.
Right.
So it was a lot of negativity that I was able to uncover and understand about myself while I was going through this phase.
Yeah, it's remarkable that there was this unfolding inside you, this sort of flowering of insight.
And it was, in a sense, it was also, like, I wasn't consciously doing that, but it was happening sort of in the background while I was also smoking weed at this time. So that helped me expand my mind in different ways as well. And I was doing it occasionally at that point. So whenever I would do it, first it was started out of pain, drowning out all of that pain. So while I was drinking, I would also smoke. And then eventually when I kind of gave up on drinking as much, I would utilize marijuana for expanding my mind, for, you know, gathering new insights about myself. So while I was in one of these sessions is when these insights would come out, be like, oh, why was I behaving these ways? Yeah. And then while these questions would come out, I realized questions has played an important role in my life. Because when I ask the right kind of questions, then I start having those answers, you know, from within. So another thing that happened while I was in Idaho, about a year and a half into my job, I started having these pains in my solar plexus. Now, this is in my stomach region. And it started out as a subtle pain kind of in the back end, but it was there every morning I'd wake up. eventually, in about 2 months, it grew to this pain that I couldn't ignore. It was there every morning. And finally, one of the unconscious things that I did was sit down and ask questions to this pain. Like, you know, what is that message? Like, what are you trying to tell me? And one of the things that I got was, why are you waking up, going to this job, 9 to 5, 8 to 5, that you don't really care about, that you're not making much of a difference, you know, like in the grand scheme of things? I felt like what I was doing was like minuscule, like 0.2% of a difference that career, that job was making. So I felt like there was something greater out there for me. And why am I stuck in this cubicle where you're not really making any difference in someone's life? So that kind of started coming to me. And at that point, 3 months into it, I realized, you know what? This career is not it. I need to move on. I need to find something that's really calling, that's really appealing to me. And so that became entrepreneurship, right? That's really a vast kind of topic, a really vast area, entrepreneurship. So I literally just quit my job and moved back to Atlanta. This was Thanksgiving time, left my job. Yeah, I remember, you know, that the moment when I gave in my notice. And usually you give in like a 2-week notice, hey, I'm gonna leave in 2 weeks, right? I said, you know what? I wanted to give in a 5-week notice. And so I gave in a 5-week notice. So end of October, I'm like, you know what? I'm done. Thanksgiving, I'm leaving. And the moment I gave that, I felt so relieved. That pain in my solar plexus dropped. Wow. I felt just something different about me. Like I felt like I had hope, something outside of what this thing I was working on in Idaho. And so essentially, once that happened, now I had to fight my parents. I had to fight people around me. Because why are you making this decision? This is like a rash decision. Why not find another job? Maybe it's the job, maybe it's the company. Find something else in your field. You know, there might be a better company out there for you. And I took in all those suggestions, but eventually I realized like, it's not just the company, it's the whole career. Like I don't find a lot of meaning doing that. You know, I could project myself, seeing myself as a manager 10 years down the road, realizing, you know, senior people in my company. And I was thinking to myself, like, do I really want to live that life?
Yeah, right.
In 10 years. And I said, no, I don't find joy in that. You know, I don't find increasing my salary from 75,000 to 120,000 over 10 years. That's no joy for me. You know, I'd rather go and make change in people's lives and actually, you know, affect someone as opposed to working for some corporation. And so all of this was going on inside of me. And then when I was expressing myself to my parents, obviously I got some sort of opposition because, you know, my dad had gone through that whole period where he was an entrepreneur himself, lost a lot of money and then got the stable job. So all of that came up for him and he was pushing me away from becoming an entrepreneur. He said, it's going to be a tough life. You know, you'd rather just, you know, work, find something that you that you're passionate about, maybe a different career, a different job. And, you know, go in that, you know, find it with a different company. But nothing was really sitting for me. And I felt like I had to leave this and do something else. So I finally decided, like, this was it. I'm out of here. I moved back to Atlanta. And at this point, I was exploring. I was also diving deeper into meditation. You know, towards the end of my time in Idaho is when I picked up that Book of Secrets. So I just gotten exposed to meditation. And when I moved back to Atlanta, I was like, this is a perfect time. You know, I'm coming into a new space. It's a perfect time to start a new ritual. And so this time I started creating something from around meditation. So I'm a self-learner, self-starter. So I Googled what meditation is and read a lot about it. Yeah. And there's a lot of good stuff out there. There's a lot of crappy stuff out there too. And I was, you know, reading both, getting confused by both. But I felt like finally through experience, through me actually meditating, I was able to understand what the essence of meditation is. And I think one of the key things is when you first begin meditating, because at this point I was still in that mindset of running the rat race, constantly doing, never having the time to sit with myself and introspect. And so meditation was finally, you know, I was finally learning to give myself that space.
Yeah.
So initially when I would meditate, it was like I was on the top of the ocean where the waves are really, really, really turbulent. Constantly turbulent, a lot of thoughts, like ongoing. And so I would sit down to meditate And the way I'd done it is I was renting out this room in a friend's apartment, and all my belongings were in that room. So I would focus myself in the corner of the room. So all of my belongings are behind me. All my distractions are out of sight. So I would focus on in the wall and in the corner, and I'd have my phone. So I put my phone away and I'd try to meditate. Yeah. But then one of the things that would come up in mind is, has it been 5 minutes yet? Because I would set myself to do a 5 minute thing, like just start out small. I don't want to go 30 minutes, just start out small. And so I would have this question, like, has it been 5 minutes yet? And then I would look at my phone and it's only been 30 seconds. So I figured, you know what? Let me create a timer on my phone. So I put a 5 minute timer on my phone, and then I set my phone far away enough so that I don't get distracted by it during those 5 minutes. But when it rings, I'm going to go and pick it up. So that kind of got my phone away as a distraction as well. Now I've finally given myself that space to just be with myself and this corner of the room. So this began my meditation journey. But I felt like having that ritual of setting a 5 minute, you know, whatever that little baby step is, even if that's 1 minute, do that baby step. You don't want to start out with a 15 minute timer, a 30 minute timer, because that's way too far. You're going to give up much sooner than having those little baby steps.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
that makes a lot of sense.
That's been my life, is taking those little baby steps in the direction that I want to walk in.
Yeah.
And so I started out with this meditation, started meditating 5 minutes. About a few months into it, I was able to consistently meditate for those 5 minutes. About 6 months into it, I was able to do about 10 minutes. Slowly, slowly, I was able to pick up and, you know, do a little bit longer and longer. And then it has evolved even further. It started off with meditating a certain way, but now I realized, well, I could go on a walk, and that's a meditation as well, as long as I'm there looking at the beauty around me, the trees around me, people around me, not really being in my thought, not really thinking so much, but just enjoying my experience at that moment. And that's a meditation as well. So I started meditating different ways. Then I would, now recently I've gotten into breath work. So like breathing deeply and, you know, pushing the energy, the prana into different parts of the body, using mudras, different hand positions, and, you know, breathing into the body and activating different chakras. So I've kind of like evolved my meditation over about 7 years of meditation.
Yeah. Now I'm going to jump you ahead after slowing you down. Now I'm going to jump you ahead because I'm aware that the clock is running here.
Yeah.
And I want to get, so I think you enjoyed some success as an entrepreneur. I have that impression. Is that right?
Yep, I did.
You did. And so let's move into this more current stage of your life. And I don't know, did you end up getting married or not?
I did. I did end up getting married about 6 years ago. And in about a month or about 6 weeks or so, we're expecting our first child.
Good for you. All right. So that's a happy ending to that part of it. And so let's talk about, you know, you were originally wanting to be an entrepreneur, but now you refer to yourself as a soulpreneur, S-O-U-L-preneur, and really have oriented your life towards service. And so let's talk about the service and I had the word passion in there because you've been very passionate about, I think, everything that you did, particularly in your turnaround, you know, that you really felt drawn to something different, very different from where you had been going. So let's talk about this podcast that you do.
Yeah.
And one of the things I discovered was that you're doing it, I think, real time on FaceTime. Is that right?
Yeah, real time on YouTube.
It's live.
YouTube and Facebook. Yeah.
Yeah. Facebook. That's the one I meant to say.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I listened in. Tell us the name of the podcast.
The name of the podcast is What's Your Story?
What's Your Story? And who's your target audience?
The target audience is, you know, I've been interviewing essentially South Asians thus far. So Indians, Bangladeshis, Pakistan.
Right. And so I listened. And so I listened to that, and it seemed like you were allowing people to tell their stories, and out of in their stories, we were hearing kind of the challenges of being a South Asian, Southeast Asian person in America, and it's got some challenges.
And so the thing is, what I've seen thus far is there has not been a push for, especially the people that have come here from India. There's been, you know, in the kids, there's always been a focus on engineering. There's always been a focus on science and that traditional path that I was, you know, used to. Yeah. And my idea is, hey, why not give, you know, amplify voices of people that are doing something different in their lives. You know, maybe they have they're a doctor, but on the side they are, you know, they sing, or they're a great singer or artist, or, you know, a musician or whatever that may be. They have a passion, or they're created a nonprofit that's helping the world in some form or fashion. You know, so I wanted to amplify these voices. So we have had several entrepreneurs, several people that are doing different things in their life. We've had politicians on the show. South Asian politicians in the Bay Area. We have had musicians on the show, comedians on the show, an actor in Bollywood, he was on the show as well. Getting to understand what their journey has been, getting to understand if someone wants to follow, you know, wants to become a politician, wants to be inspired, is inspired by politics and wants to, you know, take a step in that direction. What's the way to go about doing that? What advice would you give them? That's one aspect that I'm covering. Not only that, but, you know, what are the pitfalls? What are the different challenges that you've faced? And then they have a message that they want to share as well. You know, the different politicians, they have their platform. So I ask them questions about that, about maybe a election coming up. So it's kind of a holistic way of talking about the issues, amplifying people's voices so that the messages can get out to the people, like, you know, we are here to support you. At some point, I'd also done a different version of this, a twist on it, and I had organized panel discussions where we took different topics. So an example of a couple topics are like women's abuse, you know, the abuse that are on women in our community. So we had several different panelists that are covering multiple perspectives. So we had someone who was a victim, who was abused by her ex-husband. It was someone who was working for a mental health organization, you know, on a nonprofit side. So kind of giving their stories. Then there was an attorney from a mental health organization. There was an attorney for like women's rights. So that we had like, you know, multiple different perspectives. Then we covered mental health, colorism. So all these different kind of issues that are prevalent in our community, but it's not only for our community, that applies to every community. I really wanted to bring out these conversations within our community because I didn't see people talking about this.
Yeah.
Now you see more and more. This was in 2020. So now you see more and more people talking about this in our community. But at that time, you know, I wanted to have these hard conversations and do them live. My one thing has always been, I wanted to do it live because I want to have that experience of unedited, live, you know, being in front of a camera and talking to someone, being able to ask them questions impromptu without having a script. So initially when I would do these interviews, even one-on-one, the panel discussions, I would have a script. I would have the questions pre-prepared, very kind of formal. And, you know, like I wasn't a good host or interviewer because like what I've seen other people do is, you know, when I give an answer, like for example, when I'm being interviewed on someone's podcast, like you, David, you'll take a thread from what I just spoke about and, you know, pull it and connect it to your next question. But what I would do is I would say, oh, wow, that's a great answer. And let's move on to the next question. I wouldn't really have that great transition. So I realized all these things while I was going through these live interviews, you know?
Sure.
And so this was like live in action. I wanted to have that experience because at some point I want to take this into a live audience in, you know, with people in person. And, you know, I want to do this in LA and all around the country, actually interview people in a similar format.
Uh-huh. Well, that's very courageous, I think. It's also reminds me of the comedian thing, you know, like to be a stand-up comedian, I think is one of the most courageous things to do. You know, there's, you know, I fantasize about it, but it's a lot of courage to do that.
I fantasize a lot about stand-up comedy as well. And so I do try to incorporate that in, you know, whenever I get a chance.
Yeah.
And it's all been a work in progress, right? It's all like every conversation that I have, I try to be more aware of me in the conversation. Because I realized one of my biggest challenges has been my vocal, my voice, expressing myself. And what I've realized is, especially in the last about 8 months, that I need to have certain reminders around me. Like you can see the one behind me that says, yes, you can. You see the other one on this side. This is it's called the Sri Yantra. And essentially it represents different aspects, different qualities that should be in a human being.
Okay.
There's a dot in the center, and that dot represents us, like the individual. And then all of these different designs represent different qualities and characteristics that
uh-huh.
in a good person.
Yeah.
I've had these reminders behind me. There are a couple in front of me in my office. And those are reminders for me to express myself. Those are reminders for me to be myself, you know, especially in front of a camera. What I've realized, even when I've, like throughout my PhD, I've had to give presentations. But every presentation I would give, I would, while I'm preparing the slides, I would also create a script and I would memorize that script. And so when I'm delivering that presentation, it's literally me delivering that memorized script.
Yes.
Because I wouldn't be conscious enough in the moment to be able to come up with something that makes sense. So I would have to recreate all of this and memorize it and then blurt it out. So I've had this fear around expressing myself, especially when the lights are on, especially when there are people around me. When I would
sure.
go to national conferences in front of 100 people, I would follow the same format. I would have this fear.
Yeah.
And so the work in the last 8 months has been me expressing myself, putting myself out there, changing my story internally, and shifting the way I feel about these situations.
Yeah, that sounds like a great plan, a great journey, a courageous one. Now you've also, and maybe this is a piece of what you're saying, you've put on some live events in the community, food-oriented things. You've created feasts, is that right?
Yeah, yeah. What we have done, so this is a great project that's also currently ongoing. What we do on a daily basis, on a weekly basis, every Sunday, you know, let me go to the history, actually. It's always a fascinating story. So this was 2020, pandemic started. People are losing their jobs, losing their only source of income. They didn't have enough money to put food on their table. So a group of us got together. An organization approached us that, hey, we have some funds. We want to do something for the community. What can we do? So me, a couple other people, all of us, like a handful of us got together, and we realized that we can provide people with supplies. And so we were putting these grocery bags of rice and wheat and flour and different kinds of supplies together so people could take it to their house, cook it, and feed their family. And so we had these drives where people would come to our facility, we would drop it into their trunks and they would leave. And we started out with one drive on a Sunday, and then we realized there was a need, so that we continued that for 5 months. 6 months, we ended up distributing 8,400 bags. Along with that, initially, about the first 5 weeks, you know, we were asking ourselves, what else can we do? And we thought that, okay, we could prepare. Not everyone has a home to take these supplies to prepare these meals. So why not prepare hot meals for people who are living out onto the streets?
Wow, yeah.
Right? And so that we started out with 100 meals. You know, we told a couple of people in our community to cook some meals in their kitchen and bring it out, pack it and bring it to us. So we started out that way. And then finally, we were able to, within like 3-4 weeks, it materialized really quickly. We were able to put together a commercial kitchen with a team of about 10 to 15 volunteers that would come in every Sunday to prepare meals from 1,000, 1,500. Now we're doing between 1,500 to 2,000 meals every Sunday. The number range varies, but we have kept it in that range. And thus far, we have distributed about 185,000 meals.
Wow. Good for you.
And we're going to continue that all the way through 2022. At least we've confirmed till the end of 2022. And now we're going to talk about 2023 coming up soon.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I am so impressed by that. And I'm so glad that we got to hear your story and kind of get that whole trajectory. And I even have some sense, I was going to say, well, what's next? What do you foresee in your future? But you've already spoken to that to some degree. Maybe there's more that you want to say.
Yeah, I do have a couple other things in mind.
Why am I not surprised to hear that?
along the way, soulpreneurship, I've also created. So these are mental kind of products, you know, to program the mind mentally. We've also created certain cleanses for the physical body. You can see them all around me. So these bottles right here, there's a miracle tea right here and the book right here. So all of these things we've created for a physical cleanse to, you know, remove toxins from our system. I'm also working on a book let me continue with this. So along with this, this is sort of removing things from our system. Now we're adding products that are adding more good stuff, good things to our system. So I'm using Ayurveda, concepts in Ayurveda, Ayurvedic herbs to add good nutrition to the body, to add ashwagandha, for example, like different herbs to the body that will build the body up and energize the body in different ways. So I'm working on that right now, creating these new different supplements and different products in that sense. Along with that, I'm working on a book. The title of the book is called What's Your Story? And this is the idea that at every moment of our lives, we are creating a story.
Yes.
Because when we try to make sense of something, when we try to make sense of three or four different situations, put it all together, we make the meaning out of it. And so I want to bring this idea to the forefront that through this concept, we have the power to create the life that we want to by understanding the power of stories in our life and what stories are constantly going on in our minds.
So that's a big agenda that you've set for yourself, but I can see that you are carrying through, and it's definitely going to happen. And when your book comes out, let's talk again, and maybe we'll do an interview around the book to help get the word out there and promote it. And
fantastic! I'd love that.
Yeah, me too. So I really have enjoyed this opportunity to speak with you and have you as a guest on Shrink Wrap Radio, and wish you full speed ahead.
Thank you so much, David. Thank you. I appreciate this interview. Love and abundance, everyone. And don't forget to drink your water.
When Varun Gandhi, PhD, reached out for an interview on Shrink Wrap Radio, I was a little hesitant. India is famous for producing gurus, some of whom have become teachers here, and some more reliable than others. If you go on the web, there are tons of individuals holding themselves out specifically as gurus and others under the banner of spiritual teacher or coach. There are lots of podcasts out there who regularly feature these sorts of folks. That's not my specialty here. I try to have an eclectic mix for you, but I'm often challenged to figure out just where my own boundaries are. In this case, I'm guided by the spiritual teachings of my own youth and Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, in which he is quoted by Matthew, "By their fruits ye shall know them." I checked Varun out by listening to his podcast, where I learned some of his own fascinating story, which we heard in more detail in today's interview. And importantly, I learned about the good works he has been doing in his own Southern California community, working with others who are also of Southeastern Asian descent. I was fascinated to learn about his own authentic spiritual journey, which to some degree was assisted by a book he read by Deepak Chopra, MD. Is Chopra one of those Indian gurus? I'm not sure he'd describe himself that way, but he certainly has shown himself to be a very widely respected spiritual teacher. Actually, I believe Arun was already on his own spiritual journey, having hit rock bottom in terms of any inner sense of well-being. Yes, he had achieved the American and Indian American dream of professional and material success, but plagued by inner torment that his life was missing the mark. So I believe it was this inner torment that was the real seed of his spiritual journey. I'm impressed by the baby steps tenacity with which he approached and grew his personal meditation process. I'm also struck by the way, during his meditations, that the unconscious served up an awareness of the missteps of his life up to that point. And of course, he's continued to seek out useful sources of spiritual wisdom to deepen his journey. He radiates a lot of enthusiasm and joy, which is both inspiring and makes him fun to talk with. As I've already hinted, I'm impressed by the fruits of his being and by his humility and his courage. He describes himself as a soulpreneur, that's S-O-U-L-P-R-E-N-E-U-R, but he also has enjoyed past success as an entrepreneur and is integrating that energy into his work. Through his website, he is selling health supplements and Ayurvedic products. So he may, to some degree, be following in Deepak Chopra's footsteps. He's also working on his first book. We may be checking in with him again down the line. Meanwhile, you can visit his website at drvarungandhi.com. drvarungandhi.com.
Hello, Shrink Wrap Radio friends. My name is Carol Williams, and I'm a huge admirer of Dr. Dave and this podcast. I stumbled upon Shrink Wrap Radio last summer. My introduction, episode number 561, Narcissism and Love, with Jung and analyst Kenneth Kimmel. Needless to say, I was hooked. I am a licensed ready marriage and family therapist associate, growing my specialty in narcissistic abuse and trauma recovery. Since my discovery of this treasure in July, I have listened to every episode available through my iCatcher app and have now happily downloaded Shrink Wrap Radio's app so that I can listen to his earlier interviews. I know I don't have to convince you of the quality of product Dr. Dave is providing to the field of psychology. You've been listening. What I did want to share with you and Dr. Dave is how much I appreciate the care he takes with creating an overall quality product. There's not one part of this podcast that doesn't scream care, from the introductions and summaries, the quality and depth of interview, and even those catchy tunes that always leave a smile on my face. Dr. Dave's warmth has me feel as if I'm a close friend rather than a listener. And at the end of every podcast, I join him in saying, "It's all in your mind." I'd like to ask for you to join me as a financial supporter. While I could tell the email of gratitude I sent Dr. Dave meant a lot, time is of great value, and I wanted to show Dr. Dave how much I appreciate the work he does. As an impoverished intern, I know that financial resources can be tight for many of us. However, even with funds squeezed to their limit, I do find money for those coffee drinks now and then. I decided by becoming a monthly supporter is my way of buying Dr. Dave a cup of coffee to say thank you for all the work you do. While I wish it could be more, I know that if every listener contributed $5 a month, the investment of his work would be validated. So won't you please head over to shrinkwrapradio.com and click on the green support tab? Thank you so much for listening and for considering joining me in keeping this amazing podcast going. And thank you, Dr. Dave, for contributing to my growth as a clinician and as a human being.
Thank you, Carol Williams, for being such a passionate listener and monthly contributor to the show. And of course, thank you to all you other monthly supporters. Your regular donations mean so much to me. Time once again to shrink wrap it up. Thanks to today's guest, Dr. Varun Gandhi, for sharing your life story, your spiritual quest, and the important work you are doing in your local community. Next week, my guest will be psychoanalyst Jill Scharf, MD, co-founder with her husband David Scharf, MD, of the International Psychoanalytic Institute. As a senior analyst for many years, she will be a definitive resource. So once again, this is Dr. Dave saying, be kind to yourselves and others.
You've been shrink-wrapped by Dr. Dave. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.